Hey everyone, Liz here. Just wanted to make an announcement before we play this episode for you. We recorded this a few weeks ago before the murder of George Floyd brought the painful reality of police violence against Black Americans in this country to the forefront of all of our minds. People around the world are waking up, and non-Black people are finally joining in the fight in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. At the time, we did not feel right about releasing this lighthearted episode. That is why we've decided to air it today and to donate proceeds from our Patreon this month to the Okra Project. This is Pride Month, and it's important for those of us in the queer community to remember that without our Black trans siblings, there would be no queer liberation. The murders of Black trans women and men often have very little, if any, coverage in the media, go unnoticed, unreported, and victims are often misgendered. It's up to all of us to protect Black trans lives. Part of that is making sure our Black trans siblings have all of the resources and opportunities they need. The Okra Project is a collective that seeks to address the global crisis faced by Black trans people by bringing home-cooked, healthy, and culturally specific meals and resources to Black trans people wherever they can reach them. You can find more information and where to donate at theokraproject.com.
Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is...
Neat!
It's a weekly boozecast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
We're getting real twisty today.
The twist today is that we're not talking about history at all.
Well, we got a little bit of history here. Okay. All right. Let me just say this ahead of time. You know, I don't want to, if you show up to this podcast every week or on the regular, first off, thank you. And if you show up for the history specifically, this is going to be a little bit of a weird episode. We're not going to do episodes like this all the time. We're not changing formats, but we kind of want to do something a little different. So, You know, we'll be back to your regularly scheduled boozy history lesson next week. Something that we both really cared about came to fruition these past week or two. And we just wanted to kind of do an episode devoted to that. So, you know. If this isn't your thing, but you like we've done previously, we'll be getting back to that. But hopefully you're down, and this is just a cool new creative way that we can use the podcast.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this week. This actually came out of, like, we were doing a live stream, and She-Ra came up because it's very important to us, and apparently a lot of you guys like it too. So we promised that we would do an intro about that, and we started thinking about it, and then we just decided to make this entire episode about it, because why not. So it's going to be a little bit a mix of history and facts backing up our speculations about fictional characters.
Yes. So the idea here is we are going through most of the main cast. We're kind of talking about what spirits that perhaps could come from their fictional kingdoms. Perhaps they would be versant. Perhaps they'd like to drink. So it is kind of fun. It's, you know, it's a fictional landscape that we're applying real world knowledge to. But before we get into that, because we're going to get into that, Liz, how's your week been?
It's fine. It's fine. You know, good things are happening in spite of the bad things happening. That's like how life works. But I have been having some trouble. We mentioned that we were having some internet trouble. I'll tell you what it is about now, because it's totally me. It's on my side. So my computer crashed like a couple weeks into quarantine, and does not seem to be coming back. So I was dealing with that. I was borrowing my roommate's computer. Shout out to my awesome roommate. Then our Wi-Fi got disconnected. So tech problems compounded on top of other tech problems. Two things happened this week that really have helped alleviate some of the stress of trying to, like, work around these things. I got a refurbished iPad to, like, use for some things, which is going to help a lot. And also, I got my Wi-Fi fixed because I can't do much without the internet, you know?
Yeah. So, especially not now. Especially not
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a win for me this week. I got that fixed, you know, and of course, like there's definitely bigger problems in the world. But for me, that was a personal thing that was kind of difficult. And I'm glad that it's that's over so I can focus on other things. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm glad that there were some problems that were, you know, impeding you that you solved. That's important. Those are yes. things to do. Yeah, I've had a good week too. It's been busy. It's weird to be busy because there was so long. I guess I was busy, but I was manufacturing my busyness by just taking on like an absurd amount of commissions. And I had to back off from that just because I had other projects come up. But this week I actually had to launch the new to-go menu at my bar. And usually, mm-hmm. you know, I talked about this last week, like usually I'd spend like a month researching and figuring everything out and pinning down the drinks, and this I did in like 3 days of just from creation to like drawing like unique label art for all the to-go product. And
wow,
it's sort of a whirlwind of production, but ultimately it's going over really well. The owners of my establishment are really happy. My manager's Yay. Really happy. So it's nice to just see that back out there. It was nice to kind of be at the bar again, even if I can only be there with like one or two coworkers at a time to kind of do this menu, you know. It's nice to see humans like in a familiar environment again. So that was good. That was
yeah.
good. I'm exhausted from it because it was just like 4 days of just doing stuff, but you know,
now you have that really cool thing that's going yeah. on, and for like a good cause of supporting the people that you work with. That's awesome. Also, yeah. your hair's fucking blue.
Yeah, my hair is fucking blue. That kind of happened on a whim. A buddy of mine who is a professional like stylist, but she was kind of walking me through how to fix my quarantine mullet, and she had a bunch of like leftovers of like random colors that she offered me, and there was like not enough platinum to go platinum, but then there was also like periwinkle and lavender, and I was just like, just give them all to me, we'll just let's yes. do this, let's figure it out. And it oh came out God. Like yeah cool, like weird, like gray, blue. It'll probably wash out to something that's more of like a silver gray, but we're just gonna.
That's awesome.
I always want weird hair, and I told myself when I turned 30, like, we're done with that now. So I've had like a normal-ish color hair for about the past 4 years, and that seemed like a silly goal to set, having normal hair.
Yeah. Why would you want
I don't know.
Normal hair when you could have blue hair?
Right? Like, anytime I'd see somebody with cool hair, I'd be like, wow, that's cool. I wish I could do that, but I made a rule for myself that I can't, so I won't. Yeah, it's no rules anymore.
Good. Yeah. It's a very good look. And
it's a fun color, yeah.
It's fucking fun.
I don't know. Whatever goes. It's also hair. I have bleached right. my hair off of my head when it was under my own control. Like,
oh my God.
Like, just like it just came out in hunks. And I mean, even then I was kind of like, oops, hair. All right. It grows back. So like, you know, I like this, but I also kind of have an attitude towards my hair of like, yeah, this is cool. The roots will grow out and it'll fade and all that bummer stuff will happen. But it's just, it always
it's
grows
gonna
back.
It's going to keep growing from your head.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. For now, at least.
For now. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
Well, speaking right. of strange hair colors.
There's a lot of strange hair color in She-Ra. Oh, boy.
Yes. Oh, my God. She-Ra. We want to talk about it. I'm going to go ahead and say there might be spoilers in this.
Oh, there's definitely going to be spoilers.
Yeah, there's going to be spoilers in here. So if you haven't seen She-Ra, if you're not up to date, there's 5 seasons. They're each one gayer than the next, and yes, yeah, they get progressively gayer. So, you know, it's on Netflix. You know, if you don't have a Netflix account, get somebody's password. so you can watch She-Ra. That's what I did. So I won't, I'll edit that out so Netflix doesn't come back after me.
Don't get us in trouble with Netflix, man.
Oh no. No. Yeah, so you know, maybe like if you haven't gotten around to it yet, pause your viewer. Yes. Pause your ears.
Or if you don't mind spoilers, just keep on listening. Maybe we'll get you psyched to watch the show.
Yeah. Should we start with the title character?
Yes, the titular She-Ra / Adora.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about them separately because they are kind of two separate entities.
Yeah, I did them as two separate people.
If you're listening, you probably know the story, but Adora is sort of the human identity of She-Ra, who is the eternal superhero. Yeah, a magical.
Yes. Yeah. A magical lady with long hair and big shoulders.
Yes. Very tall. I like that she gets considerably taller when she turns into She-Ra.
I love that. I love that tidbit.
She's like 7 feet tall.
Here's what I was thinking about when I was thinking about Adora. I mean, if we're talking about her home, technically her home, her original home is Eternia. She doesn't know that. She didn't grow up there. She was a baby. And so, like, she grows up in the Fright Zone under the Horde. It seems like they, like, what they eat there is, like, a lot of fake foods. There's, like, that scene where, like, a flashback with Catra where she's like, they have the gray pods today. Yeah. Your favorite.
It's all just, like, gross mush.
Yeah.
Well, and even, I tried to figure out, like, because Eternia doesn't appear in the reboot of She-Ra, but it is heavily in the original She-Ra and He-Man, Masters of the Universe. But even then, you can't really get any information about, like, what they might drink, what they might have been able to distill or ferment, because Eternia has deserts, it has ice caps, it has jungles, it has swamps. It has, like, Eternia is a whole-ass planet with, like, all different ecosystems. So you really couldn't nail down, even if you go to Adora's past on Eternia, we don't really know what would have been made there.
Magic. They eat magic.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so I was thinking about, like, okay, we go more a roundabout sort of personality for Adora. What's she's got going on there? She's a jock. She's a good fighter. She's got, like, this strong moral compass. She can be really self-sacrificing. And she likes to plan. She's also super clumsy, which is fun. And there's that episode where she gets corrupted and she's, like, drunk. Like, she's, like, acting kind of like a drunk person. And she's, like, a silly drunk? I don't know. So, okay. So here, I mean, where am I going with this? Okay, so first I thought, like, maybe just, like, something vodka based, because, like, vodka gets the job done. I don't know if she would ever be, like, trying to get drunk. I think that she might get drunk accidentally. I'm thinking something vodka based because she might be, like, drinking something and not understand how much alcohol is in it. That's kind of like the characterization that I get for Adora. So, like, maybe like a super stealthy vodka punch.
All right.
What are your thoughts on Adora?
Well, I went in a bit of a different direction because I felt like Adora's kind of, she's no nonsense. She's not basic, but she's kind of like not many frills, you know, but kind of reliably good and also kind of classic. I mean, this plays into my ideas for She-Ra as well. But I kind of felt like Adora in her human form is a bit more of like a mead or a dry cider, like something that's been around, because those are some of the earliest fermented beverages we had, so it's been around for a long time. It's reliable. It's very much like the working man's beverages. They've got a long history. They're heady. They can be pretty strong. They're also very palatable. Like, I felt like she would just be something kind of guttural and enjoyable and gets, also, like you said, gets the job done.
Yeah, hearty. I like that. Yeah. I like her being an ale.
Yeah.
That's cool. I was thinking, so you touched on this, that like one of the original fermented beverages, that's kind of the direction I went for the magical being of She-Ra, being like, because I'm like, okay, what do we know about She-Ra besides she's a magical, she's a first one, and she's super strong. Is she a rock?
Oh, you know,
she's a rock?
That's funny, because I had for She-Ra eau de vie, which is, you know, it can mean a lot of things in like different liquors in French cuisine. I mean, it translates to water of life, but typically it's a clear, colorless fruit brandy, and arrak can often be that too. So they're kind of the same spirit in two different cultures.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's definitely fruity because...
Well, yeah.
She's gay.
Spoilers. yeah, and I like spoilers. That. It's her being like the... like a just an essence of something, which is what all these are, like a fruit derived essence.
Yes, I agree with that. I think that's strong choices for She-Ra. Should we go should we get to Catra next?
Yes, I have some I had a lot of thoughts on Catra. I guess Catra is my favorite character, and I think that says a lot about me. my poor troubled child. I had a couple thoughts here. First off was like, Catra has so much self-destruction that I can't help but think of like alcohol that people associate with self-destruction, like Malort. You know, it's a completely malign spirit, just completely distasteful, but it can be a great ingredient. You just have to have like knowledge of how to work with it.
But then
that thought led me further to be like, well, you know, there are other spirits that kind of fall into that category of like, they just need either the proper finesse or time. And that led me to moonshine, which
interesting.
I mean, because moonshine, there's a lot of risk. It could blow up in your face at any time. But with some proper aging and care, it can turn into high quality whiskey. It just requires courage, patience, and maybe a slight lack of self-preservation. So maybe Catra begins as like a hot off the still, like young rye derivative who just needs some dilution, some aging, and maybe a magical girlfriend.
You know what? I can't add anything to that. I feel like that's perfect.
But I'm curious to know, what did you think of Catra?
Well, I was like, you know, I mean, when we kind of were talking about it before, like you mentioned scotch or like, you know, like something like you kind of associate with like somebody who's like a little bit hardened maybe. But I also read on the fandom that Catra likes sweets. So I was like, okay, so maybe she's like a sweeter whiskey. I also went like the whiskey route. So I was like, maybe she's bourbon.
Okay.
Because she's a little bit sweeter. She also, that kind of goes with a little bit, another part of my theory, because she gets redeemed in the end, and she shows that she has matured. So, like, and bourbon has to be aged. So, I don't know. That's what I was kind of thinking. Maybe bourbon. But I like the idea. I like the story that you told with...
Well, I think like
with her rye, alcohol journey, her spirit
like a
journey,
rye
if you will.
Based distillate to an aged rye. That's, you know, because I think rye because it's spicy. Yeah. You know what? Maybe the penultimate thought here then is like rock and rye. Rock and rye is a combination of rock candy and rye whiskey, and usually some et cetera spices. It was an old school bottled spirit, and it is.
Oh my god!
It's a cocktail in a bottle. It's ready to go. It's sweet, but it's also very strong. So maybe the final form of Catra could be epitomized in a rock and rye.
Yeah, because then she gets sweeter in the end, too.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You had to have that little rock candy addition from all of her best friend squad.
Aww. Speaking of best friend squad.
Yeah, what do we got next?
Yeah, let's go next. So I did think it was fun that you mentioned moonshine, because I was thinking moonshine for Glimmer.
You know what? When we were first talking, you mentioned you had somebody else's moonshine. I'm like, who? But not because the moonstone.
Moonstone, but that's not the only reason. Also because she's like, besides her being like a magical princess, she's really short-tempered. She's very rebellious. And she's like enthusiastic, and like she wants in on the action. She's really brave. So I kind of like, you know, because like I was also thinking of like champagne or Prosecco because sparkles, duh. But like I kind of thought moonshine would be cute for Glimmer because like it's very like she's very fiery. And like that's kind of what I think of when I think of moonshine, that like that's going to be something that you sip and you're like, ooh, I didn't expect that to be so strong. Like, you know, yeah. And also because of the moonstone.
Yeah. Well, I did go in the sparkling wine route, but I also, this was one where I felt like I had a bit of terroir to play into because I was looking at like the kingdom, like Bright Moon is, it's bordered by the Whispering Woods and we do get a bit of a key into there. I mean, it seems like a pretty temperate environment. Boat has a permanent midriff. It's clearly warm enough for that.
Yeah.
And also, the Whispering Woods, when Entrapta, like, triggers the storm cloud that freezes it over, that's, like, that kills their defense. So, I don't think they're used to freezing weather. I think you could argue that. So it has to be a climate that's pretty generally warm. And we see the, like, the sort of flora of the area as it's not quite tropical. But for me, my mind went kind of like southern Italy, like Mediterranean.
Okay.
And that is also the home to a lot of like really like well-known sparkling wines, especially like sparkling wine, but also like sparkling reds or sparkling rosés, which I think fits her a little bit more.
Because she's pink.
Yeah. So I don't know. I kind of feel like, so you got, I mean, you got a couple, I also thought color on all these. I won't lie, but.
Of course.
I think like a Rosa Regale or like a Lambrusco, something like a sparkling red or a sparkling pink. Like I could see that as, that was how I felt about Glimmer. Because it's also like, it's refined, but it's also very like, it's very light and fun. And I mean, you know, she's kind of got that duality of she has to be the queen, but she's also still so young. So it's regal without necessarily having the like aging.
Yeah, that was actually, that you mentioned that she's so young. I was thinking about that when we first like started going into this. I'm like, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, none of them can drink. No.
Are they? No, but like, actually, I was like, oh no, like they're children. But then I was like, wait, no, they're not. Like, it's like, they kind of don't really, except for Frosta, they don't really talk about how old anyone is. But like, when you think of like some of the other princesses, like Natasa and Spinarella are married, like they're not like that's true. Children. So like, but in, and that kind of seems like, because Glimmer seems adolescent, but I feel like she could be like, maybe she's like 19. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, you know, our concept of drinking starts at 21 is, that's an American thing, you know, and a lot of.
Right. For
older
sure.
Drinking cultures, drinking is something that you can do legally around like 18, but nobody really cares before that. So I feel like it's maybe more of that of a backdrop in this fictional reality that we're creating that is not in the story at all. Let's say,
yeah,
because I think it's postulated that like Adora is somewhere around like 16 to 18 years old at the start of it. So they're definitely, you know, they're definitely. Not
by
children,
season
children.
Five, they're probably old enough to handle it, and they do like they do go into bars a
they
lot.
They do, yeah. But you know what? There's no clear drinking happening, but you see people drinking in the bars. So
yeah. Okay, yeah, that's interesting to think about. I like that interpretation of Glimmer. We can't talk about Glimmer without talking about her bow.
Her bow, bow. I love bow.
I love Bo too. He's like, he's just so cheerful. I love him.
Yes. I was conflicted because I wanted to kind of think about like his background and like his parents, like
his gay dads.
Yeah. Cause Bo is kind of like, he's very cheerful, but he's also kind of rough and tumble. You know, he's an archer. Yeah. He kind of presents himself as a warrior, but then you look at his past and he came from a very like educated, refined household.
Yeah. He grew up in a library basically.
Yeah, so that's what I kind of feel like, you know, sometimes your drinking preferences come from your parents. They come from how you're educated. Mm-hmm. And I also, and you know, if you've listened to this podcast long enough, you know how I feel about fortified wine and sherry. And I do think like that's to me like just to sit around in your big, beautiful gay dad library and drink sherry or port. Also, like, okay. Something very, like, strong but sweet. Port and, like, fortified wines, they're sweet, they're strong. They have this beautiful, like, storied history. They're very warming, and Bow is very warm. That was my first thought for Bow, is, like, something like a port or a sherry. But I also think, because Bow himself is a little bit more of, like, an everyman, he's kind of distanced himself from that. So maybe more like a sweet, strong beer, like a Hefeweizen. It's usually stronger than you think. Mm. It's very sweet. It's very filling. It's very, like, you know, it's sort of like a big sunny orange wedge on the side, like,
oh yeah,
it's very drinkable, it's very refreshing. I just think, like, that's like Bow. It's like a heart of, like, it's got to, at the heart, it's got to be very warming and very strong, but it also has to be in a very, like, friendly package. And I just think, like, I don't know, I think one's a bit more in line with what the way he was maybe raised, but also, like, what he would drink on his own. I don't know, what are your thoughts?
I like those ideas. I like the fortified wine. Like, maybe he would drink that, like, with his dad's, the fortified, like, wine thing.
I can just imagine, like, young Bow, yeah, feeling rebellious, sneaking some sherry from, like, his dad's collection, but his dad's totally no, but they're, yeah, like, it's fine,
but they trust him. Yeah,
yeah, you're allowed to have you can do that, it's fine.
Yeah,
like, they have a talk with him that's responsible about, this is what you should do if you want to drink. Like, I could see that.
I like that. I'm not sure if I really landed on something for Bow, because I also was like, you know, he grew up, like, because he grows up in the library, but he also, like, their library is in the Whispering Woods. Like, he, like, grows up in the middle of the woods. So I was thinking, like, something, I was kind of thinking of, like, his environment and, like, the woods being part of that. So I did think about ale. I like that you got super specific with Hefeweizen, because that's a really good characterization of that. When you said the thing about the orange slice, I was like, oh yeah, yeah, perfect. I totally agree with that.
But I could also see his dad's being, like, pretty competent home brewers, and just, like, having good beer knowledge, because his dad's, like, you know, we're always making, like, seasonal beers in their kitchen. Mm. I could see that.
I love that.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's what you do. You get gay married and you learn how to make beer. I don't know. That's what everybody wants.
Yeah. That's the goal. Next, let's talk about some more princesses.
All right. I think the next one is kind of the easiest, but also the hardest, because there's so many things you could apply to her. We're talking about Perfuma, right?
Oh, I have, yes. We're talking about Perfuma. I had, like, an epiphany and I was like, oh my God, I know who she is.
I have a lot of ideas, but why don't you go ahead?
Okay. So I'm thinking, she's from Plumeria. It's basically an agricultural region, and her qualities are, like, she loves nature, and she's, at first she's a pacifist. Eventually she does, like, enjoy fighting for her friend. She's, like, a super loyal friend. She can get stressed out if she doesn't meditate. But I was thinking of, like, you know, like, she would want to be, like, super conscious about her choices, and she also wouldn't want to drink anything that was unhealthy. I think I was thinking of, you know, different plants, and actually the first plant that came to mind was, like, agave, but, like, she wouldn't want to, I don't know why I thought of that, but it's just like, oh, like, it's a plant, because it's just a giant plant, so that, I guess that's why I thought of that. But she also doesn't like cacti, which is an interesting thing to think about. Agave is not technically, it's a succulent, I think.
Yes.
But what I arrived on was, because she wants something organic and she wants something healthy, she's hard kombucha.
Oh, I like that a lot. I did not have that, but I think that's a very smart read on her.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of good for you. It's lower alcohol.
Yeah.
Well,
what were your ideas?
If you know my palate, I love like floral liqueurs and liquors. I went from the very basic start of, like, oh, I don't know, like, aromatized wines, like Le Rosé, or like botanical infusions. And then I went, like, well, you know, there's a whole family of, like, super floral, like, rose gins that I think would match her.
Oh, Like
Hendrix Midsummers or like Dylan Small Batch Rose Gin. They're two great spirits that I've worked with that I love that are super floral and very botanical. Mm-hmm. But then to kind of like go back into the, you know, like the older world of floral spirits, when we talked about the evolution of Crème de Violette, we talked about Parfait d'Amour, which is like the super like mix of like it's got rose and violets and like sometimes elderflower. Ooh, so these very sweet floral liqueurs that I could see her enjoying. There are more modern interpretations of that called like Crème de Fleur. But then so this is the weird like left turn that I took. So like you mentioned, her homeland is called Plumeria. So Plumeria is a flowering plant, but it's sacred in a lot of Southeast Asian cultures. Mm. And, you know, I was thinking like, well, you know, like Perfuma has a darker skin tone. Like maybe there's like sort of a cool like Southeast Asian read you could go here. So I wanted to look into the drinking cultures of some of the countries in that area. And I, you know, I couldn't really land on something that was both alcohol and drinking, but there's like a popular drink in Singapore that's called bandung, which is a super sweet, like fragrant rose syrup that's mixed with milk. And I was like, oh, that'd be a really cool, and it comes out as like a beautiful, like bright pink color, which just matches her color palette so perfectly.
Oh, that's
like,
great.
Oh, that, and like throw a base spirit in there, and that could be a really good Perfuma cocktail. Thailand has a really amazing drinking culture, and they have a lot of floral elements in their history. In that area, like they have a lot of hibiscus used in like their teas and in their cocktails. They're one of the first cultures to really popularize the use of butterfly pea blossom and like a really bright floral color. So I think you could like combine some of these ideas from like Southeast Asian culture with some of the like floral infused gins or vodkas and come up with a really cool like Perfuma flavor. But I do agree with you. I think like I'm inspired by like what would be a spirit that like is inspired by her. But I think as far as what she would drink, I like what you said.
I think it's also fair to say because she likes so many things and she loves anything to do with nature, like she'd be into any of these, like she she'd drink all of these. She likes everyone.
No, I like that. Yeah. I think that, you know, that's kind of one of those, like there's so many beautiful floral applications in all of liquor culture that I think there would be many things for her to have an interest in. But I do think you're right, there'd be a health-minded quality there.
Next we have Entrapta.
I'm excited. Okay. This was a little, it's funny because this is the one character you see drink a drink, like as her drink. Like you see when she's having her plate of small foods, she also has a pink drink with a lemon wedge on it. It's kind of what it looks like. And that's like the thing that she has because she has the same snacks. So that's where like my base point was like, well, what is that pink drink? And my first thought is like I just mentioned butterfly pea blossom, but butterfly pea blossom is cool because the chemical compounds in it, when introduced to acids like those found in lemon, changes from a dark blue to a light pink. And I think because of Entrapta, like how fascinated she is by the how things are made and the process of things and just like science minded she is, I think she would really love that. So my first thought is that is a butterfly pea blossom lemonade drink. Like that's what that is.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think that kind of expounds to there's a lot of areas of like mixology that are really fascinating, like the spherification and like fat washing and clarification. I think that like molecular mixology would really be entrapped as thing. But we do also know she has a sweet tooth as well because her love of small cupcakes.
Yes.
So that kind of makes me think of like complex liqueurs that have like a lot of unknown ingredients in them for her to deduce, something that she could drink and try to get to the base of, things like chartreuse or Campari. I don't know. I mean, my thoughts on Entrapta are I think she'd be fascinated by distillation and fermentation on a whole, but she probably would have a standard drink that is her drink that is just the thing that she goes to. So that's what I think that pink drink is. I think like something very simple and reliable would be her thing, but she'd be fascinated by the whole like scientific process of the liquor
world. Yeah. I like the idea of incorporating the pea blossoms and the color change. That's really cool.
And it fits with her palette.
Yeah. You did much better on this one than I did.
What did you? Well, no, tell me what you had.
Well, okay. I mean, there's lots of things about Entrapta that we know. She's a really interesting character, but I definitely like latched on to the, like, she likes tiny foods and fizzy drinks. So I was like, maybe she would like those little, because they're cute, like, even if they're not, like, nice to drink, the little layered shots, because they're, like, tiny and cute. Yeah. And then, like, beyond that, like, just, I mean, she, if she likes anything fizzy, I think she would drink a fizzy drink.
No, I agree. I think maybe something simple, though, like a... like a vodka lemonade, but the lemonade is infused with butterfly pea blossom, so it changes colors, and it's fizzy.
Yes.
So it's sparkling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got the soda in there.
Yeah. Because I think it's also, you know, it's like she knows what she likes. She's down to, like, experience other things, but she goes back to her same pink fizzy drink.
I think that's good for Entrapta.
Yeah.
Next princess, let's talk about Mermista.
Oh, Mermista's great. I have ideas, but I took the lead on Entrapta. Why don't you hit us up with Mermista?
Okay, so she's from Selenius. It's a kingdom in the middle of the sea, obviously, because she's a mer person. She's a magical mermaid princess. So I'm thinking about, like, what you drink at sea and also her personality. Like, she's super sarcastic. She's very blunt. She's kind of dramatic. She set a boat on fire once. Just once. She wanted to see how it felt. I said she was spiced rum. She's a little salty. She's a little spicy, maybe. And then, like, just when I think of, like seafaring drinks, she's not a rum punch. I saved that for somebody else because she's not really, like, sweet isn't her thing. She kind of has, like, trouble expressing her true feelings. I see her as a spirit, but I kind of think that to go with the sea theme, she's spiced rum. That's what I thought.
I think that makes sense. I mean, that was my first thought, was like, you gotta, like, think of, like, beachy spirits like rum. But I also, like, I kind of factored in her personality, which is so dry. And I couldn't help but think of just, like, a briny, dirty martini. Ooh. You know, just, like, it's salty, it's dry, like. And then I was doing some research, and so, like, there's this distillery in Canada that makes a seaweed gin. And I was like, oh, a seaweed gin martini.
Oh, my God. Like,
a little dirty. That would be Mermista for me.
But I like that. I would have changed my answer to that. I like...
Well, but I also... I don't know. But also, like, there's a lot of, like, the seaside, like, the Speyside scotches that are super duper influenced by the salinity of the salt air and the like, actually in the ground, that you get a really strong, like, salty quality. And I don't know, for her, because she's just, like, she had, like... Oh, she would drink some scotch. Like,
she would get down with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, a Speyside scotch or, like, a seaside scotch, I also could see her drinking. And then outside of that, I like a classic daiquiri or a very nice salty margarita, I think could also, like, fit with her hand. Like, maybe, like, a salty margarita made with blue curacao to fit her color scheme.
I like that.
So, yeah. And I think she would probably, like, have a good repertoire of drinks that she can, like,
yeah,
recommend and espouse and handle. But I like kind of like that range of, like, salty scotches, like a dirty martini, a blue margarita if she's feeling fun. But, you know,
I like the idea of her having a lot of knowledge, like, in, like, her alcohol rep knowledge, because it seems like whenever they have, like, a scheme or something, or they're going to, like, a social thing, like, Mermista's the lead to that. She's like, okay, guys, here are your parts. like we're going to a fancy fucking party. So I feel she seems like the most adult of them to me, even though, like, a young adult, but, like, she seems like she's got this under control. I think that's fitting, for sure. The reason why I said that she was spiced rum is because I kind of landed on, for Seahawk, I kind of landed on rum punch. Because okay. that would be something that he would drink, like, as a sea captain. But also, it's kind of in complement to Mermista. Like, he can't, like, handle as much as she can. So, like, he gets a little, like, he needs that sweetness. He needs a little dilution. He likes adventure, you know. Like, I feel like a party punch is kind of fitting for him in that way. But also, he's, like, a very sentimental softy, too. Like, so I like something sweet and light for him, too. But that's why I originally said spiced rum for Mermista, and then I was going for rum punch for Seahawk, because...
I like
but,
that.
You know, but so that they could, like, go together, because they go together.
See, I... For Seahawk, for me, I could not think about Navy Strength gin.
Okay.
But it's because... Sailors would set it on fire to make sure it was up to strength.
Oh, my God.
And that might cause a boat to get set on fire.
And he loves setting boats on fire.
So I thought maybe that. And then my other thought was, well, on that line, like, what about Fireball? Because let's be real. Seahawk is kind of that
guy.
Yeah,
okay.
He's kind of that guy.
Yeah, okay.
So those are my two Seahawk offerings. But I also agree with you. I like that him and Mermista go together. I couldn't tell at the end of the show if they were, like, fully shipping that or just, like, kind of insinuating that. But either way, I'm fine.
I think they're shipping it because it seems like they've been dating throughout the show, but, like, she's just kind of embarrassed and, like, reluctant to, like, admit to him that she has feelings for him. But it seemed like in the finale they had that moment when he was, like, distracting her and everything. And he's, like, putting himself in danger.
Oh, yeah, when she was chipped.
Yeah, when she was chipped. And it felt like it's, like, only Seahawk could do this because he knows her so well. Because they actually are close. Part of his, like, insecurity is that he feels, like, alone. And he's got, like, abandonment issues. And, like, the whole, the Princess Prom thing. He's her ride to Princess Prom. And then he thinks that he's going to be the plus one. And then he's not. That's, like, kind of their relationship, is that they, like, she's, like, not ready to admit how important he is to her because he's kind of a ridiculous person. So she's a little bit embarrassed, but, like, she does actually really care for him. I don't know. That's what I read into for the season finale.
I like that. I agree with that. I ship it. I not ship on fire. Just ship, safe ship. Don't set the ship on fire, Seahawk. You need this one. Gets you a real cool lady.
Yeah.
All right. What do we got up next?
Let's do Scorpia.
Oh, Scorpia. All right. I don't know how you felt about Scorpia. I mean, I love Scorpia. But she's great. And I don't know. Like, my initial thoughts that I wrote down were like just giant Belgian beer, like, sweet as hell, but also, like, 12% alcohol. Because that's what, like, those Belgian beers are like. They're sweet and they're so delicious.
But super strong.
But they so strong. Or what's funny, because you said the rum punch for Seahawk. I said for Scorpia, maybe an overproof rum, but, like, mixed with fruit juices and modifiers and served in a novelty bowl the size of your head.
Ha!
Like, I could see that for Scorpia. Also, like, Scorpia, it makes me think of, like, the scorpion that you see sometimes in the bottle of, like, mezcal or whiskey in some parts of the world. And I could see, like, the smoky strength of mezcal complimenting Scorpia, but she's special. She's like a pechuga. Like, you know, that's a pechuga's made with, like, an entire season's bounty of fruits and spices. And sometimes, like, a whole animal is involved in the fermentation. Like, it's a total special, you know, once in a year thing, a pechuga mezcal that's just full of, like, spice and fruit and flavor and, like, so much character. And I could see, like, if you're gonna go the mezcal route, then Scorpia is absolutely a, like, one-off pechuga mezcal. I really like Scorpia.
Yeah, I love Scorpia. I love Scorpia. Did you see Yeah, Scorpia was kind of hard for me because I'm just, like, I did want to just, like, think about her personality because, like, although, like, of course, like, it's obvious that she's super, super strong. But just like the thing that I love about her is that she, like, you know, she's like, I'm a hugger. Like, she's like, she's so warm and so, like, dedicated and loyal to her friends. She also has pincers for hands, so it might be, like, difficult for her to hold some things. So I was just, like, thinking of, like, something, like, something that, that, like, when you drink it feels like a warm hug, but, like, would also be easy to, like, hold in a mug. So I said she was a hot toddy.
Aww, I like that.
Yeah. And it can be strong. It can be super strong, too. But I like what you did there. I love, even though, like, of course, like, it was, like, you know, you don't want her to be chipped when she's chipped, but it was interesting to see her there because it's, like, the first time that you see her just using her strength to know, like, there's no limits. That was cool to kind of, like, see another side of her.
Well, that feeds into why I love, like, and I'm glad, like, the series ends with the Perfuma Scorpia, like, being made canon. Because they both, even though Perfuma looks like, you know, she's this beautiful, willowy, super femme, and Scorpia is, like, big, strong, like, they both have that in common where neither one of them want to use their power to their fullest ability because they believe they have a greater faith in their kindness and their friendship to fix situations and their strength. So even though Scorpia looks more outwardly strong and Perfuma looks weaker, it's said, like, they even, like, try, there's that... That episode in season 5 when they're encouraging, like, Perfuma to use her full power, and she's like, no, my full power is my love, like, my friendship. And, like, they have that in common. They do. I love that. Like, you know, that they both could be total, like, dangerous, world-ending badasses. And they're like, no, we're nice. Fuck you.
Yeah. Isn't that, who calls, somebody calls Perfuma a demon in the battlefield. But I don't remember who. Also, some things that are not related to booze that I just, like, had so much fun, like, digging into for Scorpia. First of all, did you know what her species is called?
No.
Her species is called Scorpioni.
Scorpioni?
Scorpioni. It sounds...
Oh, that's cool.
It sounds like a scorpion pasta.
I was gonna say, it sounds like a noodle. Yeah,
it definitely does sound like a noodle. Also, I had no idea until, like, I really dug into the fandom because it's something that I didn't notice. But they show, like, at some point in the series, they show, like, a family photo of Scorpia's, and she's got lesbian moms.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not really sure because there's also, I remember, like, her talking about her father at some point, but I mean, that doesn't mean that she can't also have lesbian moms, you know. It's just like, maybe her, like, her, you know, her dad's probably in the picture and got control of the kingdom, but, you know, she's also got, well, lesbian, you know, moms. He was a sperm donor. I don't know.
I only found it in the fandom, and there were, like, offhand remarks to some of the character designers saying they wish they pushed it, but Perfuma was designed around the idea of a trans woman, and I think there were just regrets on the cast of, like, not pushing it further because I guess maybe they don't want the JK Rowling effect of, like, oh yeah, totally, but we didn't, like, but I but I think that's cool that that was kind of into the character design, was that Perfuma is a trans woman.
Yeah, and that was something that the, like, that came out because the character designer for Perfuma tweeted it and was like, this is how I designed her. So
this is what I did.
Yeah, that's, you can't argue with, because I designed her. This is how I designed her. No. But I did think that was cool. And I know, like, it's like a thing. A lot of people are like, why do they have to, like, put gay shit everywhere just because? I'm like, I am cool with it. Like, give me all the gay shit. Give me all the queer shit. Like, put it in whenever you can.
Well, I mean, I don't know if one particular show decides to do that. Like, I don't think I need to make the statement that there's a lot of shows out there that don't have any queer representation, yeah. Right? Like, we know that. We know that. There's so many shows that live in a world where everybody's straight. So it's okay if one is a little bit more gay than normal, because most shows are probably a little bit more straight than normal.
Yep.
So,
yeah, I agree.
It's okay.
I agree.
It was okay.
Okay, so I have Frosta on this list, but I don't
do.
I kind of, like, part of it, I wrote, she's definitely, like, she's 11. She's 11.
Well, so I mean, know. I looked at, I looked at what her, well, also, though, she takes the kingdom over, what, like eight or something?
Yeah, she's very mature for her age.
She's the what is the little Mormont from Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Takes everything over?
Yeah. Yeah.
The bear queen. So I don't know. I'm not going to, I don't encourage children drinking, but I did postulate on what might be made in her kingdom, because it is obviously, it's very cold. I looked a bit towards a couple different colder climate drinking cultures. Obviously Scandinavian aquavit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a more savory anise cousin to gin. Brennivín, or burning wine as it translates to, from Iceland, would kind of be like a dangerous, like cold climate, you know, like strong, powerful drink that I think fits her.
Yeah.
Vodka for, I mean, Russia.
Okay.
Like, you know, that fits like the tundra very well. Like, but she is young and, you know, we don't know her flavor palette. So I did want to give some like lighter, sweeter options. Ice wine, which is made from grapes that specifically grow in cold weather, I think could be a possible frosta option. And then there's also sweetest punch, which is like a spice liqueur that's sometimes served warm.
Mm.
You know, I think there's a lot. There's a lot of like cold weather climate boozes that I think are fitting for frosta.
Okay,
when she is of age or for her court.
Yes, or you know, she's ruling a kingdom, so maybe she can just like, don't tell the princess she can't drink, because like she's got a lot of shit to do.
So. She can have a little ice wine as a treat because ice wine is very sweet and also not that high alcohol.
Okay, I like that. See, I wasn't,
compared to everything else I said.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure which direction to go in, because I'm like, okay, so if it's cold, you want to drink something hot, but Frosta really likes cold things. So would she drink a frozen beverage in an ice kingdom just because she likes ice so much? I was thinking of hot drinks first, and then I was like, but maybe like if we did like the non-alcoholic one, like she could have like a frozen virgin daiquiri.
Well, and I mean, she does, her ice armor does make her really cold, so it's not like she's impervious to cold. So maybe having a warm drink to warm her up is like a good thing.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Also, one thing that I like couldn't connect, but I really wanted to try to connect, was that she likes stupid puns. Like whenever she's in battle, she's like, "Ice to meet you."
Yeah. Well, we'll make a hot toddy with aquavit and sage, and we'll call it an ice sage.
Ooh, I like that. That was very sharp of you to think of on the fly like that. I wasn't expecting that.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that was great. Good for you.
You know.
Speaking of on the fly, I had some like other, besides, you know, we were going to stick it to like the core cast and then like the princesses. But I thought like there were some secondary characters that I really wanted to include. And one of them that I wanted to include was Swiftwind.
Right. And
you might be asking, why would a horse need to drink? Why would a horse want to drink? But maybe he does. And I kind of thought that because Swiftwind, before he gets transformed into Swiftwind, is a horse from Thaymor. And when they meet him, there's like a festival going on in Thaymor. It like feels like a very like Mayfair kind of festival. It looks even like even some of the characters in Thaymor kind of like resemble satyrs. So like, I was kind of thinking like, this seems like a very like Dionysus or Bacchus type festival. Yeah. So I kind of think that, and also like Swiftwind is a fun guy. So like maybe he would like to party, but what would if a horse was gonna drink, what would a horse want to drink? Probably something like sweet and a little nourishing. And I think this also goes into like when I think of festivals, like I thought Swiftwind might like mead.
Okay.
Something hearty made from honey. So that's why I think that Swiftwind would want to drink.
What would this horse drink?
I mean, some like a lot of dogs like beer. Not saying don't give your dog beer, it's not good for them. No, but like, but they do like it. So he's also a magical horse. So like, you know, he can tell you what he wants. It's not like we're making a horse drink Where am I going with this? Who knows?
Don't make horses drink. Don't make dogs drink. But if a horse can talk and fly, you can let him have a drink.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yes.
That's where
we're going. I think that's good. Anyway.
Yeah, I like that kind of bacchanal read because it's like, yeah, I think mead works. I think you could say like a heady red wine would work. He's a fancy boy.
Mm-hmm. He is a fancy boy. We do have two more princesses that I wanted to talk about that we don't really get a lot of backstory on, but they are like they do kind of like come out in the most recent season, and they like we get a little bit more info on them and their relationship. Natasa and Spinnerella. I've got some ideas for them. They're right. Kind of silly, but okay. So I was thinking about Natasa, both like Natasa and Spinnerella, they kind of are like, oh, they come from the far reaches of Etheria. Like they don't really say like where they're from, but they've been in Brightmoon for a while and like their relationship is really cute. We like them. We get a little bit more info on them in the fifth season, especially on Natasa, because she gets like this bit of dialogue that really shows off her personality, and she also like she shows herself off as like a really good like strategic leader, where she's like, I know everybody's weaknesses, I'm gonna go through and tell everybody what their weakness is, and this is how we're going to get my wife back after Spinnerella's been chipped. But she proceeds to like go down the list and tell everybody their weaknesses, so she kind of just like reads everyone.
Yeah.
So
oh, I love that scene.
Yeah. So I said that, you know, maybe she's got some booze in her tea.
So what, like a Long Island?
Maybe a Long Island, but you know, I thought it was appropriate for her to drink tea after reading everyone. Sips tea.
It's valid.
So that's like the kind of, I mean, you know, we don't have a ton of, like, there are really cool characters that we can speculate a lot, but we don't have like a ton of information from the show. So for Spinnerella, I was thinking also something kind of silly, because I was thinking like she's really sweet and empathetic. She's kind of maternal. She's all like they like Natasa and Spinnerella both have like this kind of competitive thing going on with each other. But like they're both super strong. So I was thinking maybe something up for Spinnerella, something like maybe a little bit sweeter. So like a perfect martini, but spun, right, not stirred.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So that's what I got. I've just got puns for them. These are the jokes, kid. I'm so sorry. Another one that I wanted to talk about a little bit, just because I think I really like the idea of having a character that gets a redemption moment in the end, like when it's very unlikely. So I want to talk about Hordak for a second. He's obviously like he's the evil guy in the beginning, but by the end it's like, you know, there's like a bigger evil guy that's like, he's not so bad in comparison, although he does like some pretty fucked up stuff. But you know, like he's like, but then it's like he's got self-esteem issues. Oh no. And there, I think the relationship with Entrapta is so, like, when he's, like, forgotten her, but, like, when she's, like, remember your imperfections make you beautiful, or, like, I just think that's, like, such a beautiful moment. And I kind of, because of the name is why I picked this, but also because, like, I'm thinking, like, he's kind of, like, he's pretty hardened, but he, and, like, is, like, has the appearance of being strong, but then he's also, like, he's got, like, a softer, sweeter side. I'm thinking, like, whiskey, because it is, like, surprisingly sweet sometimes. So I went with redemption rye, because...
Okay.
Because he gets redeemed. yeah. But,
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think it's the whole like weird cult thing that, I mean, it's not weird. It's a beautiful, like a brilliant character arc, and it's a great writing for the season. But that whole thing, it's just like, it was a little too close to like drinking the Kool-Aid, that it's like, I don't know, Kool-Aid, fuck. like what represents Hordak? And do or do not drink. I don't know. But no, I like that. I think that's a good liquor for him.
Aww.
He needs it.
Yeah, he does. So I feel like that's like a good nice list for us. A lot of it would just be speculation, which much of this is, but it's fun.
This is all speculation. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, the goal was to try to take characters we have some sort of background and like characteristics for. At some point, it's just like, I don't know, they're blue, they drink this. Like, I don't want to do that.
No. Yeah. Can I ask you a question? Who is your favorite character booze pairing?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I mean, does that imply that I have to like the booze as much as the character?
Well, you could be. It could be for either reason. Open-ended question.
I mean, my favorite character in She-Ra is Catra.
Yeah.
And I think that is the character that I relate strongest to. I think that, you know, it's rare. I think often when you get femme characters, if they're evil, they're evil without question. They're not given that complicated, like, evil but for a good reason. And Catra actually got a complicated development, and so I don't know. I really love the time given to her, that she's not just a written off bad person, and like her redemption arc is, I think, really beautiful. So, and I mean, I also love Malort. I am a big fan of Malort. I think it's one of those things where we kind of like drink it in shots and go like, oh, it's terrible, right? Yeah, this sucks. It's like, no, but if you actually know what to do with it, it's just an ingredient that like deserves respect. Like, none of you know what to do with it. So while I like my argument for Catra's other things, and I like your opinions, I think specifically the Catra Malort pairing is something I feel the strongest about.
I like that a lot. I also like Bo as Hefeweizen. I think that description was really beautiful. I liked the part of your suggestion for Glimmer drinking Lambrusco. That kind of like sparked my imagination when like I was like, oh, like as I was thinking of all the lighter like colors of sparkling wines, but like Lambrusco of like being like this purple, because she's purple, it's got like some more depth. It is like light and bubbly, but also like kind of packs a punch. I like that too.
Well, but I mean, I like your connection that seems fairly obvious, but I missed it. Glimmer with moonshine. Duh.
Yeah.
Like, that's very smart. And she is that. She is very much that, like, kind of just super, like, hot-tempered, like, combustible. I mean, that's the funny thing. Like, her and Catra have that in common.
Yeah.
It's funny that they don't get along sooner, but yeah. I don't know.
I like that.
I think this whole exercise was fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't think we're arguing that there are right answers
here.
It's just fun.
These are just our ideas. I'd love to do this with like another cast of characters. Obviously, we won't really be able to do it with She-Ra anymore because that was it. That's all the seasons they're making.
That is it. There are other characters, but I don't think we're going to get more about them.
Yeah,
so,
it would all just be speculation, which is always fun, but you know. You can do that too.
I like
too
to be a little,
home.
Like, have a little bit of ground to base
yes.
on.
Yes. Same. I need, like, a little bit of limitations and that I can play within those boundaries. Like, it's like, oh,
it gets
I don't know.
Really hard. It's like, this is what they look like. Go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. I don't like to assume things about people.
Don't like to assume things about people or fictional characters.
No.
This was
fun. This was weird.
Yeah.
Thank you for putting so much work into this, Liz.
Thank you for suggesting this. This was so much fun. I'm glad that we could just like make a, like, we just both wanted to talk about this and we decided to make a thing. So I love it.
And I guess if you've been listening this long, then maybe you feel the same way. Like, yeah, you know, it's cool. It's not that often that we get to be excited about things that represent, I don't know, like represent us. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not like you know, like, queer representation is not great. And I think that that was a really kind of like cultural reset moment when they kind of didn't do the, like, J.K. Rowling wrote and be like, oh, maybe this person is maybe. Like,
yeah, they're like, no, it is.
These people are gay. These people are gay, too. Like, this person has two dads. Like, just get used to it. Like, I think specifically for queer culture. And, I mean, it has good representation as far as, like, diversity. But I think specifically for queer culture, She-Ra did something that has not been done yet. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thankful for that.
Thanks, She-Ra.
Thank you, She-Ra.
Thank you.
Thank you, showrunners of She-Ra.
Yes.
And you know, like I said, we are super appreciative of those of you that show up every week just for the history lessons. And that is what we're here for. This was a fun indulgence that we are very happy to take part
yes,
in.
Yes. Thank you for allowing us to indulge.
Yes. If you listen. We'll be back with the rest of, like, normal history lessons next week. However, if you dug this and there are other fictional universes that you would love to have drinking cultures and cocktails derived for, hit us up. Yeah. Give us some recommendations, you know? Because this was fun. Like, maybe not an all the time thing, but, like, as a, you know, every couple of months kind of thing. I think this is fun.
Yeah, and
definitely on the live stream. Yeah. And on the live stream on Friday, we will figure out how to make a couple of She-Ra cocktails. Mm-hmm. Right? We'll have to figure that out.
Yeah, we sure will. So you can join us for that live stream this Friday at 8:30. That is 8:30 if you're on the East Coast. If you're Pacific time, it'll be 5:30 Central. It'll be 7:30. And yes, that's where we'll be. You can join us for virtual happy hour. We'd love to have you. Thank you for everybody who's been listening, and thank you to everybody who's been joining in for virtual happy hours and supporting us through this. This is really awesome to see you guys interacting with us. That's really fun for us.
Yes.
So thanks for listening. Thanks to Absurdist for our theme music. Thanks to essential workers. If you're out, be safe, wear a mask and social distancing, and make sure you thank them.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I have been Taylor Sproul.
And I've been Liz June.
And this has been
Neat.